This week on the Zone of Truth, Griff and I discuss Curse of the Crimson Throne's Blood Pig minigame, revisit popular segment Banger Battle with Paizo's Monster Core, and of course, answer some listener questions. I'm your host, Steve, in the studio with your GM and my co-host, Griffin. Roll a will save. You're in the Zone of Truth. And we're back.
We're back, baby. Late night sesh.
Yep. Listeners, going to be a brief one today. Just getting that out of the way. You probably saw that when you downloaded this thing. We're going to keep it tight.
11:52 p.m. right now.
Start time.
Start time.
11:52 p.m. Woke up this morning, worked a full day of work, drove to Griff's place, hopped in the car, and we had a full evening.
Oh, yeah,
baby. What did we get into?
We went to Jungle Gyms.
Yes.
And that's a grocery store / destination in Cincinnati, which only took us about 2 hours to drive to after work. And then, you know, an hour and a half back because of less traffic.
Yeah. While we were down there, we went down with Chris and Haley. Chris is kind of from the area, so we had to, of course, get some Skyline Chili. How was your Skyline Chili experience, Griff?
Oh, it was dog shit. Like, ugh.
I gotta say, one of the worst fast food experiences potentially of my entire life.
I like the setup. We got like real plates and metal silverware. So like that isn't horrible. Like the sit down experience isn't like a robot delivered our food.
Shocking. Because there are 12 people working there.
With the help of a waitress, which you don't usually get at fast food restaurants. But God, that was... So I got the Coney bowl. And it just... I mean, it was like a pool of the most liquidy chili with one fucking hot dog in it, covered in a pile of cheese the size of my fist.
Yeah, I don't know how you did that. That was the poorest looking fast food entree I maybe have ever seen.
I finished it in like a minute and a half flat.
Mm-hmm. And then Chris and I, we both got three cheese conies, which calling them coney dogs is a stretch, because they were almost more liquid form. Boy, that was just a really, really unpleasant meal. And I think we all immediately regretted it.
Yeah, I still have yet to feel the repercussions of it, but I know they're coming.
Yeah, another reason why this is going to be a short episode, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so why were we doing that? Well, we went to Jungle Gyms because we were trying to lock down some provisions for the upcoming Poseidon's Bounty. I'll mention at the end of the episode exactly when that's going to be, but we have what we need to make it happen.
Yeah, I actually got 8 tins of fish.
Damn.
I probably won't bring them all to the thing, but I have some variety to pick from. There was Jungle Gyms, pivoting from that horrible Skyline experience. That was cool as hell.
Had you ever been there before?
I've never been there.
Me neither. It was amazing.
It was
so cool.
Like the coolest grocery shopping experience ever. They have like these lame, tacky animatronics all over the place, but the building itself is like 50% bigger than a Costco or something.
Yeah, and divided up generally into regional sections. So like, I don't know, here's 3 aisles that's all Japanese food, 3 aisles that's all Vietnamese food, 3 aisles that are all Greek food. Just like most of the major types of food out there.
Yeah, I mean, they had every country or at least like a region dedicated to it. And like, they had a whole hot sauce section. They had a whole cheese section, which was also labeled by country, which is really cool. They had like a whole jerky section. They had a whole soda section, and we all got whack sodas.
Yes. Let's not go through everything that you got, but like, what's one crazy thing that you picked up today? Because I got alligator andouille sausage.
Oh, yeah, I got alligator jerky, and I actually had one on the trip home because one hot dog and a 1/4-inch deep bowl of chili did not fill me up, surprisingly.
Mm.
So I had a Cajun-style gator jerky that was fantastic. I'm actually most hyped for the tin fish. The stuff I got is stuff that is like highly reviewed and recommended that I was able to find there and is not in any other grocery store.
Hell yeah. Well, in a couple of weeks, we're going to be trying that all out. I didn't get any fish from Jungle Gyms. I had already gotten my stuff at a Polish deli back in Chicago. But we're going to be trying a bunch of really cool stuff, and I'm actually looking forward to it. I don't think it's going to be the intense pressure challenge that Poseidon's Bounty 3 Shrimp Ahoy was.
Yeah, that...
I mean, it is going to be a ton of tinned fish, but it's going to be good stuff. So, is there anything else that you really wanted to catch the listeners up on that you've been up to lately before we get moving?
There is one game that I've been playing. It's called Anode Heart, and it's another creature catching game, believe it or not. But it's really cool. It's very similar in story and kind of setup to Digimon. And I think it takes a lot of notes from like the Digimon world games, but not the ones where it's like a Tamagotchi following you around, the ones where it's like turn-based combat. And it's been really fun. There's one thing that's unique about it where the leveling is capped. So like you level up to a certain point and you can't level any further and you have to reset your creature, and by resetting it, it gains like the stats that it gained up to that level back as what's called like potential, which you can allocate to any of its stats. So it gets stronger every time you like reset it, and that's a pretty damn cool mechanic. It's pretty unique. I mean, it like the Digimon games do it too, but I think those are the only two that do it, so I've been having a lot of fun with that.
Heck yeah, man. Well, on my end, I've been watching Solo Leveling, which is an awesome anime that it seems like everybody's talking about these days, but I'm just going to give you all the briefest hook because the show takes some twists and turns. It feels a lot like Sword Art Online if there was heavy gore and really high stakes. It's awesome. It's really, really fucking good. So check that out. That's a big thing that's happened in my life. Also, I'm dating someone.
What?
Yeah, it's true. I have a girlfriend now. Let's talk about Blood Pig from Curse of the Crimson Throne. Moving on. let people mull over that. So, Blood Pig. We're going to talk about it. For listeners who may not be caught up on all of our shows, this is an event that takes place in Book 3 of Curse of the Crimson Throne. So, if you are not caught up with Bestow Curse, Episodes 75 and 76, those are going to get spoiled. Just letting you know, if you're not caught up, you maybe want to skip ahead, or just be aware that you might hear some stuff that may spoil how the game's going. So, let's run through the setup of getting to Blood Pig. This is a game that the players are supposed to engage with to, I guess, meet the Emperor of Old Corvosa, get an audience with him.
Yeah.
And you have to build an 8-person roster, but most of the people coming into this are rocking a traditional 4-person party. How do you do that? Because we had to get creative with it.
Yeah, the adventure assumes you don't.
Oh.
The adventure assumes it's 4 versus 8.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, how is that fair?
So,
because this is all turn-based. They get like way more turns.
They do. They get way more turns. But you'll notice, like, you listeners that have listened to these episodes probably heard some pretty cool abilities from the other side that they were using to, like, try and positioning things that those characters had, that if you were playing an 8-person group, it's like the generic Emperor's Thug.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't have any of that cool stuff, and they're a lot weaker than you.
Sure.
So it evens out that way, although the game does assume you maybe like reach out to somebody that you know. I think Eamon's like an option thrown out there. So there's a potential that you bring more to the table than 4 people, and Leori is supposed to help you if you've like accepted her help. So most parties are bringing 5. Some will think of like Eamon or someone and bring 6. But since you guys gathered a group of 8 because you knew about Blood Pig before you went, I kind of tried to even the odds a little bit better on the other side to still make it fun.
By giving some of the opponents like some cool abilities and stuff.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Sure. So our intro to this comes through NPC Devargo. Now, a traditional game of Curse of Crimson Throne has him dying in Book 1, right? Like he's supposed to be like an antagonist to the party.
You either kill him in Book 1, or he dies in Book 2 through other circumstances.
Gotcha. So
he's alive in our Corvosa.
So him being the intro for our party to this game and vicariously the Emperor, How is this supposed to play in the written material then if you don't have this in?
The written material basically assumes that you approach the emperor somehow, either through his thugs, and you fight his thugs in the streets and maybe like agree to like letting them take you back to the emperor. Or there's like a mechanic where if you successfully beat like three waves of thugs, they offer to like take you back and talk to the emperor, and then the emperor won't really talk to you unless you entertain him. And that's where Blood Pig comes in. So most parties end up playing Blood Pig unless they go guns blazing into the place. And, you know, it's just a fight the entire time. But the first time you meet the emperor, he refuses to let you talk to Scream unless you play this game.
Sure. So
now I knew you'd use DeVargo.
Yeah.
Because he's there. And, you know, there's all these hooks with DeVargo now. I think people that are thinking about running Curse, it might be a good idea to let DeVargo live and play it kind of the way I did, because I think this was like a really smooth way to get you guys there.
Yeah, it definitely is smoother than fighting three waves of foes and they're like, hey, why don't you come back and play a sports game with us?
Like, yeah, I think at some point you're supposed to realize that like, hey, we're going to have to fight through like 100 of these guys. So we better like listen to them when they say like, we're going to bring you back to the emperor.
Makes sense to me. Let's change perspectives here from a more narrative one to a more mechanical one. So like everything else in Curse of the Crimson Throne, this was written, I guess, originally for, you know, 3.5 and then eventually 1E. We're converting this all to 2E and we're using some game rules that were created by somebody in the community. I don't know if you have their name to credit them.
Ollie Bird.
All right. So let's talk about the 1E mechanics versus the 2E ones. The 2E ones, I was transparently worried that this was just going to bog down into be just like us all rolling skill checks and that really being it. I thought the gameplay was generally pretty smooth. We had a couple tweaks that maybe we would have liked to see after playing a little bit to make it go a little smoother, but I really enjoyed how this game turned out. You just took it straight off of the conversion, correct?
Yeah, if you want the rules on Pathfinder Infinite, find the guide. I think we did a pretty good job explaining the rules in the episode before we played for the 2E piece. And it's actually really interesting. It's a very different game in 2E because of the three action economy. You know, the 1E game, for instance, like picking up a pig is a standard action that provokes. Everyone has attacks of opportunity. So,
oh, sure.
It's a lot harder to like grab the pig. You know, the squirming pig is pretty much the same, although checks are different. But there's still the, like, if you take damage, you might drop the pig. Passing a pig is a standard action in 1E, which makes it kind of tough.
Yeah.
Throwing a pig, same thing, treats a pig as, like, an improvised thrown weapon. So you get a -4 on your roll, and it's a range increment of 10 feet, so it does it that way instead of using an athletics check, which I think the athletics check was, it worked a little bit better. Intercepting a pig is a combat maneuver instead, as is stealing a pig. And that becomes difficult because it's like, it is a disarm combat maneuver, which isn't compressed in 1E.
And so you like, you need to have like a lot of feats that work. Yeah. And a lot of people are prioritizing like a grapple or trip build over disarm.
Yeah. Like if you're a disarm build, then this game works, but that's like 0.5% of people playing 1E, right?
Yep.
So it's unlikely that you're going to have somebody. It's tough. A lot of things are standard actions that are a single action in the 2E version. And I think they kind of mitigated that by having like the, you basically have to restrain a pig to do a lot of the throw stuff.
Sure.
And I think the game was a lot more mobile because we played it in 2E. I think this would have bogged down in 1E to a lot of like, I take the pig, I hit you, you drop it, that kind of thing. Like, oh, you try and disarm me, you get an attack of opportunity.
Yeah.
You successfully disarm, but then you take damage and then you drop the pig.
Gotcha. And that all tracks. Continuing the mechanics conversation, there are specific ways that the Emperor changes the game slash the rules through the game. Does the book offer any suggestions to what he might change, or is that stuff that you did on the fly?
So the way the book presents Blood Pig is that it's a game that the Emperor is like constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. And so even the Shingle Snipes don't know the rules exactly because the Emperor keeps changing stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
They recommend, which I didn't do because I had beefed up the opponents, but they recommend, like, once somebody starts using, like, natural attacks in a round, he bans that. So, like, he bans claws and bites and that kind of thing, and only lets you punch. Also in the book is, if you remember him being like, oh, best 2 out of 3, best 3 out of 5. Like, if you really want to keep playing Blood Pig for that long, you could allow that. But the book basically says if he goes to 3 out of 5, then they say, okay, we don't have any more pigs.
Yeah. And that's also a nice lever to either extend the game if your characters blow through it really fast, or cut it off if it's going way too slow.
Yeah.
Hey, we ran out of pigs, or we just got to keep this thing going. I feel like we saw a good amount of Blood Pig. 6 points scored across the Elite 8 and the Shingle Snipes. Did we miss anything? Are there any like procedural events that happen if the game extends for a long period of time, or things that the book might suggest might happen in a given time if it goes to X amount of rounds or whatever that we just didn't get to?
No, you got to it all. They do recommend you like start changing rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of did when you guys figured out a winning strategy.
Yep.
But beyond that, it leaves it up to you to change the rules however you want.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever the Emperor thinks would be advantageous to the Shingle Snipes is like a rule you can put in. But they didn't seem to have like a strategy that would best you in a certain way. So I didn't really feel the need to throw a bunch of extra rules in there.
Sure, absolutely. And all things said and done, it was a little bit of a blowout.
Yeah.
The Shingle Snipes scored a point way late in the game, and it seemed kind of difficult for them to pull that off. Was this the final score that you expected?
I expected you guys to win, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
They're not on par with your level. And I think part of the balancing act is I wanted to give them cool abilities and stuff and make them stronger than the regular Emperor's guards. But by doing that, I really had to cap them at a certain point because I knew this would likely devolve into a combat.
Yes.
And so I couldn't make them like on par with you guys because that'd be a slaughter fest in like a combat. If mm-hmm. you have a bunch of people that are your level and then the Emperor and everyone else joining in on a fight.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of my final question on Blood Pig. We won the game.
Mm-hmm.
We're supposed to get an audience, and it seems like that triggers a fight. Now, there's narrative implications here because Vex's grandfather's about to get executed, so we're going to be fighting. But is that always kind of the outcome, whether you win or lose?
There's a way you get a 10-minute audience with Scream,
mm-hmm.
but the way it's written in the book is you basically have to go to best 2 of 3.
Sure.
And then they run out of pigs, and then the Emperor begrudgingly allows you that audience with Scream. But that's not really enough.
Okay.
Like, as you'll find, you probably don't want him, like, still owned by the Emperor. You guys don't want the Emperor, like, existing
mm-hmm.
because he's a menace and this is your home. And so for your party, I kind of thought, like, they're taking him out either way.
Yeah.
So there's no reason for me to give them the audience now just to belabor the point. You'll get it once you finish this fight.
Yeah, and I think that totally tracks, especially for the narrative that we're weaving together. This guy's going down. He's done some bad stuff. You know, this is Vekinmir's home turf. It's not happening. This guy's not getting allowed to roam about here.
Right, and I thought, like, you know, there were some things about this setup, such as like you guys all having your weapons taken away and that kind of thing, led me to want to do the full moon
mm-hmm.
at this point.
Yeah.
I've kind of had that in my back pocket since book 2 and was trying to think of when to do it. Initially, I was kind of like, well, it might happen like right when they get to Old Corvosa. and it's like they go rampaging in Old Corvosa, and then I was like, this would be a pretty baller time to do that.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to gas you up too much, get your head too swollen up with that ego, but man, what a perfect time to drop that. I think everyone is hyped to see what happens next, because we got a big fight with a lot of stuff on the line, and right away, Sylvie and Mir turn into were-rats. Things are going to go nuts. I can't wait.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this fight.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be a big one. Anything else on Blood Pig before we move it on? We haven't recorded what happens.
Yeah, yet. We haven't.
So I don't know what happens in 77. We haven't got there.
I think if I were to go back to the rules and kind of change a couple things, I think I might, and you kind of hear this in the second episode, me relaxing on the rule for you, like dropping a pig in the pit.
Mm-hmm.
The mechanics of 2E kind of lend the party to want to do certain things. Like Chris mentioned, can I just drop it and shove the pig in to get around this like other action I have to do? I think one thing I would change is for the pass a pig, I would allow it to be an action from either the passer or the receiver.
Sure.
And that as long as the other person has a reaction, because I think that got really cumbersome. Like when you guys spent four people's turns trying to take the pig from Figgy.
Yeah.
Like you're on the same team. You should be able to pass the pig as long as there's a reaction there. So I think that's one thing I would change. And another thing I would change is just actually being able to just drop the pig in the pit.
Yeah, it seemed like, even the Figgy moments aside, one of our biggest hurdles was getting the pig from our own teammates.
Yeah.
Which was proper by the mechanics that were put out there, but logically doesn't make a lot of sense, especially when you can drop a weapon or whatever with a free action. And it's your friend who's trying to take it from you, you know? Now, Figgy, you can make the argument that he's a mostly wild animal with a pig in his mouth and won't want to let it go. Sure, but like,
yeah, when
like,
the tactics,
why can't Eamon give somebody right, the pig?
Right, when the tactics like, devolved into like, who should take this because they have the lowest reflex DC? It's like, okay. All right, now we're like metagaming a mechanic of Blood Pig that just is a little cumbersome. One thing I did want to talk about is that I had three stat blocks for the Shingle Snipes.
Mm-hmm.
The Strikers, because I think we talk about their name differently.
Yep.
The Strikers had Debilitating Strike, which could make you guys lose reactions or movement speed.
Mm-hmm.
They also had a reaction to follow you. So that was like a movement reaction that I thought would come in handy, and it didn't end up really coming in that. I used it like twice. The midfielders were monks, so had a lot of movement speed and had that whirling throw. So they could throw you if mm-hmm. you had the pig, or throw you away from their allies, which I thought was really useful in this scenario. And then,
did you say the Strikers class?
The Strikers were rogues.
Rogues, gotcha. All right.
And then the Defenders were barbarians, and they had that like ally throw ability that was clutch. Because what I ended up trying to set up was like a monk, like one of the midfielders getting it because of their big movement speed, and then having the defender throw them 30 feet towards your goal. But you guys used Mir and Figgy so well as like a wall around that, and with Figgy's reach, you know, giving a reaction there most of the time allowed you to take the pig away before I could get to the goal. So that was just good tactics.
And hey, we're going to have to fight all those guys very soon.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes in 77. But in the meantime, let's keep it moving here. We are bringing back an annotated version of a classic segment. People have been clamoring for it. Banger Battle. We're doing Monster Core today because the Monster Core was just released. And let's get into it here. The bus rides again. In this segment, Griff and I will be picking monsters randomly from the Pathfinder 2nd Edition Monster Core book and engage in a spirited discussion about them, ultimately deciding whether to bang or battle. Monster Core is the third remaster core book, packed with over 400 individual monster write-ups, including everything from common animals like wolves and bears to terrifying supernatural foes, such as the Rune Giant or the Grim Reaper. To pick randomly, we're going to be selecting random numbers between 8 and 357, corresponding with the entries on the pages of Monster Core. The monsters are on pages 8 through 357. This is a book that is completely in line with all Tui errata so far and the remaster rule set. So it is the most up-to-date version of the monsters out there. If you got a monster that you're playing in a game that you want to be up to date, pull it from here. We are going to hit the random number generator now, and that is 212. What do we have on page 212? Griff, what you got?
Looks like the Kraken.
Ooh, okay. Initial thoughts. We got tentacles.
Yeah, we got tentacles.
Yeah.
That's a big plus.
That's a huge plus. Huge in all caps here, because this is a gargantuan creature. Creature 18, gargantuan size.
Yeah.
Let's see what we're dealing with here.
Kraken is an enormous squid-like leviathan with a cruel intelligence. It hunts ships, whales, and heroes alike. The hatred and envy Krakens hold for all Gothus, their rivals, has led many Krakens to make their lairs in sunken cities where they can sift through ancient lore and uncover long-lost arcane secrets. I'll let one sift through my sunken city to find some arcane secrets.
I think I would as well. All right, let's see what else we got here. Krakens have a hoard of treasure. Seems kind of like a dragon-like thing.
They got constrict, baby.
Yeah, and I hadn't gotten to there quite yet, but I think whenever you get like a free grab and some constrict, that's just BDSM coded here.
Yeah. Definitely a dom though, immune to controlled and emotion effect.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. You are not doming this creature. Ink cloud, what are we doing with that?
They can control the weather.
Turn up the heat a little bit.
Yeah. They reshape the weather within 2 miles.
Now, the Kraken ink does carry a poison. Poison damage and sickened. That really seems like it. So I guess if it inks, you might get sick, but that's not going to kill you. It doesn't seem to be that much damage at the level that you would be encountering.
Well, it's a good night when it does ink.
Christ.
Ink on my chest and tell me that you love me.
Well,
notably, it does have a couple innate spells.
I was just about to say.
10th level dominate, but on animals only. And everyone knows we're animals in the sack.
That's true. So it counts. Punishing winds as well. Resist energy.
You got a fart thing.
Oh.
Kraken's right there.
Punishing right there winds. For you. Going through this stat block, I know which direction I'm leaning here. And I think a couple more things. Tentacles are agile.
They gotta be.
It's worth pointing out here. I'm gonna have to go bang.
Yeah, Krakens dwell in deep ocean trenches. So they got a lot of experience in trenches.
That's right. They have a high intimidation score, so some people like that.
Oh yeah, what are those skills looking like?
We got athletics. You're going to want that. That's at a plus 38, a plus 32 intimidation. That's the one that really gets me going. Plus 35 nature, plus 33 stealth. Where's your head at on this? You banging or battling here?
Oh, I think I'm banging the Kraken.
Yeah, release the Kraken into my bedroom. More like, ayo.
Good luck getting the Kraken to release me, baby.
I don't think it's happening. Well, that was the Kraken.
It was.
You want to do one more of these?
Sure.
All right, I'm generating a new number. Go to page 174.
Looks like a goblin.
Well, that's an easy one.
I've seen so many hot goblins on the internet.
I know. Like, that's
really swaying the opinion there. Looks like there's a couple stat blocks on here. There's a goblin warrior and a goblin commando. And I definitely want that goblin going commando.
Yeah, I mean, here's the deal. Check it out. If this goblin's going commando, its default items coming in with leather armor, already in leather. Nothing under there. Might be some chafing going on. That's this guy's problem.
I got a goblin scuttle.
Now, that's a reaction I'd like to see. Most shirk their responsibilities in favor of wading into the fray and claiming more glory from their tribe mates. So we could get like a... This is like the leader of a polycule, sounds like.
You got the goblin song. That's, you know.
Sure.
Classic.
That is definitely a classic here. Not much else on the stat block here. Low intelligence.
I mean, it's just endearing to get called a long shank.
And can we, let's talk about this artwork here. What's going on? There's a skull over his crotch. See that?
Yeah. It's like a
skull codpiece.
Yeah.
Huh.
It's like a deer skull or something. Covers the whole thing.
Well, that's the Goblin Commando. Where are you going on that one?
I mean, bang, right?
I think that's a bang. Yeah. I'm right there with you.
They say, like, some goblins are upstanding members of humanoid civilizations, but many are impetuous and vicious creatures who delight in wreaking havoc. That's the kind I want.
Yeah, I like the impetuous. That's kind of like a bratty thing. I kind of like that.
They hate livestock, but...
Well, I don't like really livestock either.
I don't keep livestock, so...
Yeah, not a problem for me.
Wouldn't be a problem.
Mm-hmm. I don't have any interest in their fungal goblin dogs, so I wouldn't like if those were around, but...
Yeah, I guess they don't like dogs, but, like, let's be real. Like,
yeah,
you know, bringing the dog in.
No. No, you don't have to worry about that.
Yeah, I mean... Well, they got horse choppers, dog slicers, trained in knife play.
And come pre-equipped with a short bow with 20 arrows. Don't know how you use that. Huh.
They fight in large groups, so.
I don't know. Get the goblin polycule going.
You're right, yeah.
All right, well, that was another edition of Banger Battle.
We did it.
Unfortunately, we didn't have any bangs to try, or rather we did, but they were flavors that we've had already, and it's also now about 12:30 in the morning, and I can't be taking 300 milligrams of caffeine to the dome at this hour. Let's do a question.
Sure.
All right. Ducktron the Duck Lord asks, thoughts on necromancy as a whole, yay or nay? I wonder if they're talking about in real life or in the game. Unclear.
Like using necromancy for a whole?
Get your mind out of the gutter here.
Just a banger battle.
That's true. All right. Let's clear the refractory period and get our thoughts out of the gutter here. Thoughts on necromancy as a whole. I don't like living corpses walking around. I'm going to say mostly nay.
I like it in game. I think it's fun. It was a lot more fun in 1E.
Now, aren't there a lot of spells that aren't about controlling the dead that have the necromancy tag, though?
Yeah, like a lot of the healing spells.
So, yeah, I think... This is a deceptively complex question.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta be into the healing spells.
I'm a big healing fan. Yeah, that's true.
Necromancy school is really good for debuffing, even if the spells don't do it are kind of gross or evil.
You got any of that come to mind?
Well, I think like all of the like blindness, deafness stuff is all necromancy.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Huh. I guess that makes sense.
So in general, like it's a cool school of magic.
I think it's a cool school of magic with generally an unfortunate name, because necromancy makes you think of raising skeletons from the dead, but that's half of what necromancy actually covers, right?
Yeah.
So I think it probably needs a better name or a more clear name or something. I don't know, but yeah, I'm generally positive on it.
Kind of like the powers of life and death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
Now, how do you feel about necromancy in the real world?
Oh,
that's something you'd be interested in?
That'd be terrible. That'd be awful.
Yeah.
Nobody likes that.
No.
I mean, because none of the stuff you bring back is the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's always the lesson of those stories, right?
Yeah, it's like the Pet Cemetery conundrum. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the dead is better.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, nay in the real world. Big nay.
Yeah.
I feel like that would get out of hand in the real world, too. Like... You know, you get a necromancer raising stuff, and then, like, they lose control of the stuff, and then it's like, okay, well, not everybody's screwed. Thanks, dude.
Yeah, and then it's like, okay, you can trust maybe a certain person to responsibly do necromancy, but then when other people start figuring out, you know, you're going to get some bad people doing bad things with it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's going to spread like wildfire, you know?
Like, there's going to be some, like, basement dweller doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be end horribly.
Yeah, it's going to go bad. It's going to go real bad.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to hit one more question before we get out of here. This comes from Gray Silverwind. Question for the Skull and Shackles crew. Too bad, you just have Griff and I tonight. We, the audience, are currently seeing a crew that aligns more on the idea of a morally good pirate. What characters would you all build, or how would you alter your current characters for a more Captain Harrigan-style evil pirate? So I think... Not talking mechanically for a second, I think the easiest way just to do a bad pirate is just think about, there's a concept in like comedy and stuff about punching up versus punching down. it's okay to make fun of people that are like very rich. It is not okay to make fun of people that are very poor, right? Like, so I think kind of if you're trying to do a morally good pirate like we are, we can get a little Robin Hood-y with it. We can like lean a little bit more into adventure. But like if we wanted to go the other way, when we took over this Rahadumi ship recently, we could be like really shitty to the people that we just press ganged. That's the first thing that I think of.
Yeah, like paying it forward in a bad way.
Yes. Like, hey, Plug and Scourge whipped the shit out of us for 10 episodes, and now that we have new people, we're gonna take all that aggression and shit that we built up onto the new guy. That's from like a theoretical perspective how I would think to answer that question first.
Yeah, I mean, I think you just play into the worst parts of piracy.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I suppose, not that hard to extrapolate to where that leads. But, you know, when you guys are answering questions about how are you going to run your ship, like, you're probably going to run your ship the same way this one's running. I think the kind of characters you can bring to that are interesting. Like, when we played Skull and Shackles, again, this is in 1E, but I had a backup character, although my character never died, that, back to the previous question, was a necromancer.
Hmm.
And was, like, definitely evil. And was a, I think it was a juju oracle.
Ooh.
Yeah, so I was going to do the whole juju zombie thing, which would have been pretty fun. But, you know, those evil concepts, like Kaya could easily be an anti-paladin.
That's right.
Vesmara, right? It's a chaotic neutral god, so you can go either way with it.
Mm-hmm.
You could definitely have Grady, instead of trying to help other people that have less experience at sea than him, like looking down on them and being shitty to them.
You could have like Wit has Candy and like expresses how much they love her and has a really good relationship with their animal companion, but like could be like mistreating that animal and being like, hey, I'm commanding you in combat. Like, here's like a swift kick to go do something.
Right.
Like, could be shitty.
Wit could be poisoning the food for everybody just to spite a few people.
Absolutely. You
know? I mean, Atlas kind of relishes in the pain of others a little bit, so is maybe morally gray already and might fit into that kind of party.
Yeah, Atlas could flip on either one of these sides of the moral compass here.
Calypso similarly is like out for revenge, so could be manifesting that revenge in a more malicious way.
Mm-hmm. And I think when we finally get our comeuppance on Plug and Scourge, it's probably going to be a put them out of their misery type thing, but we could repay the favor to them, right? We could keep them alive and like whip them and put them in the sweat box and stuff. We're not going to do that because we're not bad people, but like we could do that. So that's how you do that.
Yeah. I think this question is kind of getting at like what character class would you play for that? Mm-hmm. I would argue that everybody could play their class evil, but there are certainly interesting options. Like somebody could be an evil cleric of Vesmara if they wanted to, or
hey, like Calypso could be doing Dirge of Doom instead of inspiring courage, right?
Well, that's still probably going to happen.
I mean, it's still probably going to happen, but you could focus on that instead of inspiring people, at least off the rip.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. There's a lot of other malicious sea god. Like, you could be a cultist of Dagon.
That's true.
There's certainly paths you can take to play evil in this campaign, and it's pretty easy to do so. I think it's actually going to be a really good test of the party's morality, to your point, like when Plug and Scourge get their comeuppance, what you guys do.
Yeah. So, hey, Gray Silverwind, stay tuned. You're about to find out. But, you know, I said this was going to be a short one, and it is. I need to go home. It's very late. So we're going to do a little bit of wrap up and housekeeping here. And the only thing that I really have to plug is that we have a date for the next installment of Poseidon's Bounty. That's Poseidon's Bounty 4. We locked in the name at Fin-10-10, right?
Yeah.
All right. That is going to be April's Live Zone of Truth. You can attend that on the Discord if you are a $10 and up patron. That is going to be Saturday, April 13th, and we're kicking that off at 4 p.m. Eastern. That will subsequently release in audio form on the Made feed as, I believe it'll be Zone of Truth 135. I think we have one more to go before that live show, and that will be on April 22nd. So that'll release to the public. Looking forward to this one. It's going to be a blast. We have all of the fish. We need to finalize what the rules and this like sub mini tournament is going to look like, but it's going to be a blast. I'm looking forward to it.
I think so too. This was a weird idea, this one. So I think you're going to want to be there live for the reactions, I think.
This is either going to be great or a huge disaster. And either way, I think it's going to make great content. So in the meantime, let's put a bow on this one. Griff, you made it out of the zone of truth. You survived your will save. Anything you want to say to the people at home before we get out of here?
No, just we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Later.